This is The Gaggle with David Helfenbein.
This week on The Gaggle, we have on Jake Sherman. Jake Sherman is a senior writer at Politico. Jake, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Thanks for having me.
Jake, I'd like to start out first by talking about the big announcement recently that you will be co-writing a political playbook moving forward. Can you talk a little bit about how that came to fruition and what your new role will be?
Sure. The best kind of encapsulation of it is Mike Allen and Jim Vandehei, who were the two of the founders of Politico, announced that they were going to leave and start their own new media company. They announced this in the beginning of the year. So Anna Palmer and I, have been writing together for a long time. We raised our hands. I mean, doing playbook after spending most of your career at Politico is like, you know, playing center field for the Yankees if you're from the Bronx. So we put together a pitch. We put together a lot of memos. We're reporters, so we're not really used to writing detailed memos. And we went through a long process of convincing not only John Harris, one of the other founders who's remaining at Politico, but Robert Allbritton, who owns Politico, that we were the right people for the job and that we were the people that could bring it into the next generation.
What is your new daily schedule going to be like? Are you going to wake up really early now?
I already wake up really early, but I will be waking up earlier. I'll probably get up in the 4 o'clock neighborhood, I'd imagine. And then we aim, one of the things that we've discussed is we aim to have Playbook out on the early side. We want to make sure that our, the Playbook community, which is, very influential and high ranking, and powerful community, that they have the Playbook when they need it, which is before their 8 a.m. meeting, before they go on television, before they really start their day.
Is it still going to be 7 days a week as well?
It is. It'll still be 7 days a week. What we'd like to say is people are getting what they want, and we want to make sure people keep getting what they want and getting more of what they want. So we're going to do it 7 days a week. The product will be modernized a little bit, and some of those designs should be unveiled soon. We are going to break more news than ever before. So we're really excited about what is to come.
Let's talk a little bit about your background. How did you first get interested in journalism, and where did you start your career? Was it at Politico?
It's an interesting question. I never really thought about being anything but a reporter, which is maybe a weakness of mine. But I went to GW for college and was the editor of the college paper, did a bunch of internships while I was in college. The Journal News in White Plains was my first kind of major internship. I interned at the Minneapolis Star Tribune in D.C. I interned at Newsweek. Then I went to Columbia for grad school. Came back to D.C. And interned at the Wall Street Journal in their Washington Bureau, and then went to Politico in 2009. So that was really my real first job. And when I came to Politico, we were about 50 strong. Now we're 500 with offices, not only throughout the country, but throughout the globe. So it's grown tremendously since I've started.
Last week, I spoke with Paul Singer at USA Today about Aaron Schock. Can you talk a little bit about your reporting on Aaron Schock and how that came about?
Sure. It's kind of a long and winding tale, but The Washington posted the first story that kind of peeled back the curtain on Schock's strange lifestyle. And that was that he had redecorated his office in the motif of Downton Abbey. So at that point, we kind of started to dig in on his campaign spending. And we wrote a story that basically said he was spending huge amounts of money all over the country at hotels and in restaurants and flights and all that stuff. Then from there, we got into some potentially illegal behavior, or behavior that's certainly improper according to House rules and potentially illegal. The one thing that kind of did Schock in is that when we asked him why he had billed the government for 150,000 miles on his personal car when the car was sold with about 60,000 miles. So that's when he resigned, and it was a crazy episode. It was about a little bit more than a year ago at this point, and there's been a grand jury convened in Springfield, Illinois, for now almost a year as well, looking into his behavior. And we expect, and we've reported this, but we expect an indictment at some point in the near future.
Your main beat is Congress, is that correct?
It was before Playbook.
Okay.
Playbook is going to be a full-time gig. But yes, I've covered the House Republicans since 2009.
So what are some of the favorite stories of yours that you have worked on? Do you have any favorites that you have?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely my I think the Aaron Schock stuff is my definite favorite. It had the most impact. It had the it was thrilling. It was a lot of fun, and we were really proud of that. Now, there have been other stories. We did a lot of work on Bill Schuster and his relationship with his personal relationship with a lobbyist who had been lobbying his committee. Some other favorites. I covered the rise and fall of John Boehner and the rise of Paul Ryan. So that whole storyline has been a really interesting thing for me to keep track of.
What makes a good story? Is it readership or is it a good narrative?
No, it's drama. It's tension. It's behind the, and when you're writing it, it's the behind the scenes information that you're able to get, that you're able to convey to your readers. It's being able to take your readers into rooms they can't get into situations they want to understand better, give the people who make the decisions a platform to explain why and how they made those decisions. Those are elements of a good story. And listen, corruption and bad behavior, I'd be crazy to say that they aren't. They are very good stories, and they're always very interesting and very interesting to report and tell.
Why do you think that members of Congress get involved, like Aaron Schock, get involved in things that they obviously shouldn't have been involved in? Is it because of power goes to their head, or is it because they don't think they will get caught, or is it more to it?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think that the system that's in place is the campaign finance system and the spending system that's in place is basically done on the honor system. So members have wide discretion on how to spend campaign money, which is a dangerous thing. When you have $3 million in the bank and you can basically spend it any way you want, that's a tough thing to say no to. That's one issue. I think a lot of members of Congress come into contact with very rich people, and they say, listen, I could live like that too, and there's nothing stopping me from doing that. So I think those are the two main things. I mean, and your power definitely goes to people's head. So I think that's also part of the equation.
A little bit about media and the history of media. Why do you think Politico is thriving, whereas other papers are not?
So if I had that question, if I hadn't had the answer for that question, I'd make a lot more money than I do. But I think a few things. We know exactly what we are. We know exactly who we're trying to reach. And Playbook is kind of the perfect encapsulation of that, right? I mean, we know what our audience is, and we know what they want, and we deliver it to them. And we don't try to be something that we're not. We're not looking for a mass audience. We're looking to reach the most influential people at the top rungs of power in the planet. And Playbook kind of connects those people. But when there's no real market for commodity or general interest news. And if you're in that business, you better be one of the big dogs, or else you're not going to have much impact. You have to own a space. You have to be indispensable in the area and the readership that you serve. That's kind of the way we look at it at Politico.
As you move on to taking over Playbook, and you probably are going to start getting 1,000 emails a day, how are you going to start to filter what are the most important things to put in Playbook and what are not?
So a few thoughts. There's three people that are doing Playbook now. Anna and I are the kind of the lead co-authors. And Daniel Littman, who has been working with Mike, is also a co-author. And so between us, we have a pretty good sense of what drives conversation, what the elite people and the powerful people are talking about, and what they will be talking about. It's kind of an innate sense, but we're lucky because Daniel's done it for a long time, so he has that sense as well. And it's all about talking to people and figuring out it's not as much of a guessing game as you'd think. It's about talking to people and figuring out what they want, need, and we're here to serve the audience and to give our audience what it needs to be well-informed and indispensable going into their day.
I know you occasionally go on television to talk about some of your stories. How do you prepare for going on television, especially when you have a written story? How do you talk about it then?
It's a good question. I hadn't really thought about that. I like to think of it, and this is not an original thought, but this is, I like to think of what I'm going to say as a headline and then have three bullet points underneath it. So, you know, kind of a overarching theme and three supporting facts that I put in, you know, pepper in the response. But you're lucky if you get 35 seconds on television to say anything, so there's not a ton of preparation that's really needed. I mean, it's a medium that we don't have a lot of time to explain ourselves on TV.
How is Playbook going to play a role in the election, since it is an election year? And what are your opinions on Playbook's role in the election?
Listen, I think our job is to take you into the decision-making process of these candidates. And that's something that we're going to be able to do. I mean, I was just in Cleveland yesterday and last night trying to figure out what's going to happen at the convention and trying to talk to people who are working for and around Donald Trump. I don't think, you know, although I'd love to think we can, Playbook can't swing an election. But what we can do is we can, A, reflect what's going on in the decision-making process. B, I think Playbook has a unique opportunity to reflect the back and forth between the campaign. Like, I think you'll see a lot from us of what is Hillary Clinton's aim going into this week? Where is she going to be? How is she going to try to accomplish her goal? Same with Donald Trump. How is he going to accomplish his goal? Where is he going to go? Where is he making speeches? What do you, you know, what is he trying to do? How is he trying to position himself versus Hillary Clinton and vice versa for Hillary Clinton? So it's we're going to really, and Playbook, when it's at its best, does that. You know, it does a lot of shadow boxing, we like to say. You know, Mike used to call it the mind meld. We're going to call it the brain dump, because we're going to have powerful people, campaign managers, top-level surrogates, top-level aides, explain their strategy going into each day, week, month, you know. So that's kind of that's our goal.
The people are looking for snippets of news, for example, with Playbook or with The Skim, and they're moving away from reading long-form journalism, or do you think they're just different spaces?
I think they're different spaces. I think that The Skim and Playbook are even obviously different spaces from each other, although they try to serve similar but at the same time not similar purposes. I think that, and one of our best features, which people like the most, actually, is Daniel Lipman's Weekend Reads, where he compiles a bunch of long-form journalism for people to read over the weekend. So I think that we know our readers' time is valuable, limited, short, all those things. So we do attempt to read everything so you don't have to. But I think people still want the opportunity and the ability to kind of take a step back and spend some time with a piece.
Final question for you. If someone were to be entering journalism today and wanted to follow a career like yours, what advice would you give them?
Write and read a lot. I told people that actually. I think people's writing gets exponentially better when they read a lot and consume a lot of good journalism. Internships are incredibly key. Experience is incredibly key. I don't think the same path exists like it used to go to a small town paper and then move to Washington. It exists. It's just a lot harder. So experience and be shameless and work your ass off. And also, again, be indispensable in some area. If you're the guy who knows telecom policy really well, then you could be a good telecom reporter. If you know hedge funds really well, that's something that being indispensable is key to having a role in the newsroom.
Jake Sherman at Politico, thank you so much for coming on this week.
Thank you.